Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply. All right, how you doing tonight, Aaron?
Oh, I'm doing really good. I'm sitting here drinking stout. Apparently, you brought me some beer.
It's like your birthday and Christmas, and I probably should have brought you 2 gifts because now I've just done what everyone does and gives you 1 gift because your birthday and Christmas are so close.
What do you say to that? No, I don't need 2 gifts. Actually, you did bring a card, so maybe that's the other gift, since it's sort of a funny card.
A lot of people have asked and said that I'm retiring from my job because we're such a huge, successful podcast now. And to be honest, we make some money with the podcast, with our t-shirt and hoodie sales and other things, but we're really not making enough money that either one of us could walk away from our job. So we're working on that on this new year, and we'll have premium subscription based stuff, and we'll have some more sponsors too. So there's that. But yeah, I literally just walked away from an $80,000 a year IT job to do this. Hopefully it works out. Scary.
But you did it for your health too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The job, yeah. Job was taking a toll.
So. Yeah.
But you knew when to say when.
But I saved up a lot of money. I'll be living off my savings for a little while until we get the revenues from podcasting and everything else. So what are we talking about tonight? I know our guess is somebody said Freddie Mercury is what we were covering tonight. And I'm sorry that it's close, but we're not covering Freddie Mercury.
No, I would say the only thing that they possibly share was probably a great smile.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Freddie Mercury and Freddie Gray both had great smiles.
Yeah.
This is a controversial topic. It's obvious.
Yeah.
Because you essentially have 2 sides pitted against each other. We'll get into it, but I almost think that because this is what's going on, that things won't get fixed.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Freddie Gray, though, because he's the he's the victim here. He's the one that lost his life sometime in mid to late April of 2015, which was now just last year. Freddie was 25 years old, 5'8", 145 pounds or so. He lived with his sisters, one of which was his older sister, Carolina, by 2 years. And then his other sister was Frederica, and Frederica was his twin sister. Mm-hmm. And they lived together, you could say, because they didn't have a very good life growing up. They had it difficult. Their mother had drug issues, and she wasn't very well educated at all. In fact, she knew how to count, but she could not read. And she would later talk about how that affected her children. She could raise them, but she didn't always have the money to feed them properly, and she couldn't educate them. So eventually these siblings would help each other. One of the things that would occur while they're growing up is they were in a house for about 4 years that paint was peeling off the walls, but it was lead-based paint. And this was back in the early to mid-90s. They would end up settling out of court because their court case was supposed to go through in 2009. It got pushed back. And then in 2010, there was a settlement. But the details of that settlement were not made public due to law. And so all we do know is that family and friends have said that the house that Carolina, Freddie, and Frederica lived in cost $112,000, and that they purchased it with quote-unquote lead paint money. Now, Freddie, by all accounts, and there are many people that have come forward, say that he was a really nice guy, very loyal friend, and what else can you say?
So, a happy guy.
Yeah, a happy, seemingly well-adjusted guy. And we don't always see that with cases. Freddie Gray, for the people who shared life with him, they loved him.
Yeah, very much.
Now, he did have his issues. The lead paint settlement, the reason why they settled out of court, why they had that, you could say, a small victory there, when it was going through court, the other side tried to argue that his issues could have come from having a poor upbringing and other things like that. But experts had testified that the lead poisoning in his blood, as well as the sister's blood, definitely would affect them. It would affect their brains, their development.
Stunt their education, stunt their growth, other things like that.
Yeah, they do a measurement. It's by micrograms per, I think it's per DCL. If you hit 10, that's considered lead poisoning. Even though they say that there is no safe level, there's actually a level where they're looking at, okay, what kind of damage are we going to see now for sure? They were over that level. Now, beyond that, he had an arrest record. It's reported that he was arrested 18 times since 2009.
Most of those arrests were for possession of drugs or drug dealing. I didn't see any violent arrests, any violent crime arrest on there.
Well, there was burglary, trespassing, narcotics. Yes, most of them were drug related. And you have to imagine that while he did have some money from the settlement, that's not enough to retire on. So I'm sure that because of his situation, he was dealing drugs to make money. Mm-hmm. And people say that he was very loose with money. If he had some money, it would burn a hole in his pocket.
And being that his upbringing was what it was and the situation that he's in, he doesn't have as many opportunities as the rest of us do. He's been dealt a hand, and he's playing, you know, the hand the best he can, but
it's also said that he wanted to get into football, that he loved football, but he was too small to play the position he wanted to play, which was tight end.
I thought he was bigger than that when you were saying his stats. I mean, I thought he was, you know, 145 pounds. That's pretty small, actually.
If you see his sisters, they don't look very big either. Well, anyway, that's the setup. Can't know everything about Freddie Gray, but again, we can read what other people are reporting. He's had family and friends talking in the media and giving some information here and there.
What was the fateful day of this event?
Well, it starts on April 12th of 2015.
And it's 8-something in the morning. Freddie's walking. Two bicycle cops are riding along, and he makes eye contact with them. He turns and flees or runs away. They chase him down. They apprehend him. They subdue him. And they find a knife on him. So they arrest him. They put him in a paddy wagon or a police van.
We should say this all takes place between 8:40 and 8:45 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And the pursuit only lasts about a minute, according to the records.
Yeah.
Within a couple of minutes of them apprehending him, they call for a police van. But while he's on the ground, one of the officers, Garrett Morris, uses a wrestling move to make sure that he doesn't give them trouble. Now, I know for people that have seen the video, when Freddie gets up, he looks like he's having trouble with his legs. He's put in a wrestling move by Garrett Morris, and it's known as a leg lace.
Mm-hmm.
You drive your shoulder into their butt area, and you basically hook your arm around, and you can secure their legs one by one into a laced or crossed pattern against your own body. And you stay on your toes and you keep your weight down on them so that they can't move. They're literally held there. Their legs are useless now. Now, I could imagine that when he first got up, because he was known as more of a slight guy, that when he was put in the leg lace, that it could have cut off some circulation for a little bit and he might have been a little numb. That's my guess.
And also, when they had him apprehended, another officer had his knee on Freddie's neck to hold him down.
Officers will do these things for their own safety.
To restrain you.
They always say that the best thing you can do if you're being apprehended by authorities is just to let them do their work. Just relax.
Besides him fleeing the scene, I read in the police report that they said that he didn't resist.
I know. I'm just explaining why they would do some things, even though he wasn't, quote unquote, resisting.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that some people who flee the police or are being apprehended by police do put up a fight. So all I'm trying to say is they will do certain things just to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what someone's going to do. And police officers are constantly putting themselves in danger because they're interacting with people. They have no idea who they are. From their point of view, I understand what's going on here. And I'm trying to explain why it's possible that when he got up, his legs didn't quite look right. And then, of course, by the time they're getting him up into the van, he's able to stand on of his own accord or on his own, under his own power.
He's helped into the van. I'll give you that.
But he is standing at the back of the van. He's standing there on his own 2 feet, and one officer has his hand on his arm.
But he was writhing in pain. He was yelling and writhing in pain.
When he was on the ground, he was yelling out.
Even when they were dragging him to the van, he was still yelling out.
Right. Even on the report, it says that he wasn't resisting. He was taken without incident.
Yeah.
It's probably because people do get upset. He didn't want to be taken in. He probably didn't understand why he was being taken in. And on the other hand, maybe he did have a bit of a distrust for police.
Yeah.
We don't know why he fled. He had a knife clipped in his right front pocket. The officer believed this knife to be illegal.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely being arrested at this point because of the knife. Because fleeing police is not a crime. And they can't arrest you for that.
Let's get into that a little bit later. Probable cause, fleeing, Terry Frist, all that good stuff. Because we'll talk about that for a long time and I want to get to...
He's put into the van. He's also asking for his inhaler because he's an asthmatic.
And he's having trouble breathing.
I've heard it said that if you're having an asthma attack, you can't exactly ask for your inhaler. But here's the issue. When he's down on the ground and he has weight being put on his body, both on his legs and his neck, it's possible that either anxiety or an injury that's occurring at that moment could cause him to believe that he's having difficulty breathing. I could imagine that he was having some kind of a problem. And that's our first clue that something's going wrong. He's asking for his inhaler. And too many people seem willing to say, oh, you know, he's just trying to get out of trouble. If he reports too many issues, they might have to take him to a medical center or something.
All the bad guys say this. They all try to get out of it. Yeah, that's the retort to this.
But here's the thing, is you have to take it seriously. And if he's asthmatic, they have to take that into account. They can't just dismiss it. Now, how do they know he's asthmatic? Because he's saying, I want my inhaler.
Yeah. He's saying, I can't breathe. I need my inhaler.
You can't. I'm just saying you shouldn't be second guessing guys in a serious matter like that. I worked with a guy who one day I was sitting at a table with him and we were talking about New Orleans food. And then literally within the week, he died. He had an asthma attack and it crept up on him. He was not ready. And by the time he got his inhaler, it was too late.
So this is a little disregarded at this point.
It's a serious issue.
Yeah. So he is put into the police van with his hands handcuffed, but his legs are free at first. The police van drives a little ways and then makes its first stop, which literally is to take Freddie out of the back of the van and shackle his ankles. And then place him back in the van. He's still complaining that he's having trouble breathing, yet he needs his inhaler, whatever. They continue on. And let's back up a second. They don't buckle him in this van.
Right. There are benches. Yeah. There are seat belts available.
They don't buckle him in.
They don't buckle him in. Now, the officer said that he didn't see any reason to buckle him in.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't required to. He said he didn't get the memo, essentially.
There was a memo sent out a week before saying you have to buckle in all your prisoners.
But here's the thing. From what I understand, they sent it out via email. But if you're having trouble with people getting injured or killed in the backs of police vans, you would think this would require something more than an email. You would literally have a meeting and go over it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, just that.
That's an idea.
In my corporate world, we would have full-on meetings over things that people didn't die over, but whatever. So now Freddie is not buckled in. His feet and his hands are both shackled. They make a second stop to check on Freddie to see if he's having medical issues. And he's saying he has medical issues, but at this point, he's almost unresponsive and he's laying on the floor of the van. Instead of taking him to the hospital or directly to the police station, they decide he's okay. They decide to go on to another stop to pick up another prisoner, another arrestee.
And they don't get to see each other, right? Aren't they separated?
Yeah, there's two different compartments in the back of the van, and there's actually a wall, a metal panel, and they bring this other guy in. Then they continue on to the police station. They get this other prisoner out first, and then they go back for Freddie, who is completely unresponsive. And now they've alerted EMTs,
they contacted the Baltimore Fire Department. Yeah. They're alerted at 9:26 a.m. I'm not sure what time they get to the police station, but as you said, if they don't get him first, that's more time ticking by.
Yeah.
So who knows when they got there, but...
So this starts at 8:45. So from 8:45 to 9:20, 9:30 something. So about half an hour, maybe 40 minutes.
That would be like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's also in dispute because the police have stated that it was about 30 minutes after it all started that they called for help with him.
Yeah.
But family member has stated that it was more like an hour. Now, I was just doing the math based on the information available, and it's more like 40 some odd minutes. It's right in between both of their times that they're arguing about.
Let's call it 30. Let's call it 45. Let's call it an hour. Within this time frame, Freddie goes from a completely healthy person to full cardiac arrest with a 80% severed spine and a damaged or collapsed trachea.
From 9:33 until 9:54, I guess you could say like the EMTs from the fire department are working with him. They're mm-hmm. treating him. We don't know what they're doing. We don't know what they're saying. All of that's private. He's driven to shock trauma, which is a trauma hospital that's part of the University of Maryland Medical Center. And that he arrives there at 10 a.m. On April 14th, he undergoes surgery for his three broken vertebrae and injured trachea. He's obviously in bad shape. There's also, it said, an injury to his head that matches with a protruding bolt in the back of the van. At least for the head injury / vertebrae, it appears that he may have been thrown from inside the van into the back of the van and hit his head, broken his vertebrae. That's a best guess because there's no camera back there as far as we know, right?
No, there isn't.
So he gets out of surgery and he's in a coma for about 3 days. It's on April 19th, which is a week after his incident, Freddie Gray dies.
Where do we go from here?
People in Baltimore are upset.
Oh, yeah.
The day prior to his death, protests break out. So this is hitting the news. The police department's been sort of forthcoming, at least with, the day after they arrested him, they had a press conference and talked about a few things that were going on. They don't say everything, but they let people know that there was an arrest made, was not responding. They sort of keep everyone alert to what's going on throughout, but people are upset because the way they look at it is this man died while in police custody.
Exactly.
And there's no love lost between some of the people in Baltimore and the police department.
They don't have the best record. They have a lot of complaints filed against them. It's common knowledge that they do this thing called a rough ride, a nickel ride, or take you for a ride. They have numerous people that have been injured in the back of their police vans. 10 years prior to Freddie Gray's death, another man, I have Mr. Johnson, so I think it's Dante or Don D. Johnson, who was arrested for urinating in public. They put him in the back of the van. He was not buckled in. By the time he arrived at the police station, he was saying he needed medical attention. He was taken to the hospital. EMTs or whoever the medical people were asked him, how did this happen? And he said, this is very colorful language here. He said, the bee was driving like an asshole. Mr. Johnson would end up dying 2 weeks later from his injuries suffered in the back of this van. There is a photo taken of one of the doors in their vans that says, please enjoy the ride. We know we will. So when there's actually a term, a name for this, this practice that they do of not buckling people in and giving them a rough ride, you know, you can say, hey, Freddie has a record here. He was a bad kid. And you can say we have a systematic practice that has its own term now from this police agency, this police department, for over 10 years of putting officer and arrestees' lives in danger. Now, buckling in a prisoner is both for the officer and the arrestee. If you go back and listen to episode one, you hear me talk about the guy that they arrested in my jury duty episode. And they put him in the back of a paddy wagon. And when they get to the police station and they open the door, what does he do? He kicks the officer in the face and runs off. Guess what? If he would have been buckled in, that wouldn't have happened.
Are you sure about this? Because the way I understand it is these buckles can be undone by the prisoners.
If their hands are handcuffed behind their back and their ankles are shackled and they're buckled in, I'm sorry, well, then get a 3-point buckle system. You know, get one around their legs, get one around their torso, you know. It's not just for their safety, it's for the officer's safety too. Here we see them not buckling in people intentionally so they can give them a rough ride.
Well, I don't know if it's intentional, but I can certainly say if you're riding in the back of a vehicle, I don't know if you've ever done this, but have you ever been in the back of a pickup truck and gone for a ride?
Yeah.
Your driver isn't intending to give you a rough ride, and yet there are moments because of changing driving conditions, say road gets a little crappy, has to make a sudden turn or evade another vehicle, you're going to have a rough moment. And that's all it takes.
What's the point of the sign on the back of their door then?
Well, I don't know if that's, is that confirmed as being real or is
it is.
Okay. Well, I didn't know anything about that, but all I'm saying is if you're not secured in the vehicle and they're driving, you could get a rough ride by accident.
Aaron, it's the law to have your seatbelt buckled. There's signs all over Kansas City that say click it or ticket.
No, I understand that.
So the cops are choosing to break the law right here.
Well, but you have to remember it was a policy that they enacted not too long before this.
If you can get a ticket, a citation for not wearing your seatbelt, it is a law. I don't care about their policy.
Well, no, I understand that. I'm just saying that it's dangerous.
It's absolutely dangerous to both the police and the rider.
I'm surprised because of how much money they've had to pay out in settlements with families that they wouldn't think about the liability issue. Yeah. That's apart from the law. I'm saying people can say laws be damned, but what about money?
Yeah.
When you're having to pay out millions of dollars to families, you would think they would say, what could we do to reduce the liability?
What could we do to right the situation?
But am I wrong in saying that the reason why the liability doesn't matter is because it's a governmental agency So it's not really their money.
It's taxpayers' money. Yeah, it's me and you paying it.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a thought.
Yeah. I have a serious problem with the buckling in or lack thereof here.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Let's say I'm babysitting one of your kids, Aaron, and we get in my car and I don't buckle in your kid and we drive off. I have custody of your child. We get into a car wreck. Your child dies. Am I not liable?
Well, but the difference is the government is on top. They're in charge. So if you're part of that government, quite often you can get away with stuff that the average Joe citizen couldn't.
So let's talk about something else they got away with.
Well, we're now talking about two major problems.
Yeah.
He's asking for medical assistance. He's not getting it. He's also not been buckled in. So he's in a vehicle which, again, whether by practice or by accident, that's two strikes already.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter if it was intentional or accidental. It's a man has died.
It will matter because...
Well, it matters if it's murder or manslaughter.
I was going to say that state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, ends up filing charges against 6 officers. So yeah. I think it does matter because some of these charges, you know, we could go through them.
Yeah.
Let's talk about who they are. Officer Edward Nero, he's 29, with the force for 3 years. Officer William Porter, 25 years old, with the force for 3 years. Officer Garrett Miller, who I already mentioned, 26, with the force for 3 years. Sergeant Alicia White, 30, with the force for 5 years. Officer Caesar Goodson, 45, with the force for 16 years. Lieutenant Brian Rice, aged 41, with the department 18 years. And the charges against them are varied.
Yeah.
But some of them are counts of misconduct in office, which is literally when you're either acting or failing to act in a way such as to constitute a breach of the duties of that office.
Which would be denial of medical services or not buckling somebody in. That's how I interpreted that charge.
Right. And this is to sort of clear up for people who wonder, how were they able to bring charges against police officers who are doing their job?
Yeah.
Well, that's in question whether they did their job or not. And certainly some of the things they did were part of their duties and they were doing their job. But there are questions here about some of the actions that were taken or not taken. Another one is Officer Caesar Goodson was charged with second degree depraved heart murder. Now, this is where someone has displayed a reckless disregard for another person's life. It ends up, they end up dead because of that.
Yeah.
So again, when you look at what happened here, where a seemingly healthy young man, Freddie Gray, was placed in, well, was apprehended and then placed into the back of a police van. By the time he gets to the police station, he's not responding anymore, which seems really crazy.
Yeah.
And so at least at the start here, if you've been one of those people sitting there and saying, why are people getting so upset about this? It's because this could have been anybody.
And this isn't a case like Michael Brown or all these other things where it happened during the apprehension. This isn't somebody fighting the police officer or a cop claiming self-defense or fearing for his life. This wasn't an altercation. This was somebody in the care and custody of the police who dies.
Right. So you can't say, well, he shouldn't have kicked the police officer. He shouldn't have hit him. He didn't do those things.
No.
And as far as we know, he got upset. He screamed some. He asked for medical help. He asked for his inhaler. But he never did strike the officers.
No.
And in their own reports, they don't have him fighting back.
Without incident.
Without incident. So people have rights.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether you live in Kansas City or Baltimore. In Portland or in Baltimore or in Tampa, we all have rights.
Yeah.
When it comes down to these charges, some people will say they're politically motivated or that the state's attorney, Mosby, filed these charges because she is a part of a movement or that she has stakes in these matters based on who she's affiliated with.
She's been accused of being anti-police officer. She's been accused of being anti-law enforcement. What does Mosby's family consist of? Her parents, grandparents, uncles? Oh, that's right. They're all police officers.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of hard allegation to make.
People will toss accusations around, but when you actually dig in here, you can see why she made the decision she did. And I hate to say this, and I'm probably going to be misunderstood by some people, but just because you file charges against police officers does not mean that you don't like police.
No.
Or that you hate them or that you don't understand the difficult job that they do day by day.
She made a statement, and I thought she was very clear in that statement. She said this does not reflect all Baltimore police officers. This only reflects towards the few that were involved in this situation.
I think it's important because no one should be above the law.
Well, this is that blue line that's been crossed now, Aaron. You don't cross it against any police officer. This is where you get the two sides of the argument, where even the most despicable, corrupt police officer's life is worth more than a civilian's. To put it in a nutshell, that is the blue line. I'm not coming up with this my own self. I'm actually quoting other ex-police officers that have explained cop culture to me. So these aren't my words. This is me saying what other police officers say about cop culture and that thin blue line.
Mosby is not saying that these six officers have now been fired and that she's chaining them up in a dungeon.
No.
For eternity. All she's saying is that she believes that they broke some laws, that a prisoner has died, and that they need to face trial. They need to go to court. So it is fair. They're going to go to court. And we've already seen one man go to court. It was William Porter.
It was a hung jury? Mistrial?
It was a mistrial. So that's fair. And it's fair because the jury had trouble. And I'm sure the average person across the United States, the average, you know, run-of-the-mill person is going to probably feel they'll have mixed feelings about this case because they don't like seeing people die in custody, especially when they haven't thrown up a fight. But then they also feel for the officers because police do have a difficult job. It's a mistrial, the first trial to come out of this case. So there are more to come. But to me, this is fair. Again, Mosby doesn't, she's not saying let's execute these men or let's fire them. She's saying they're suspended and now they'll have to face trial and let the chips fall where they may. So I don't like the idea that anyone's above the law. No. And we've seen presidents get away with things. We've seen congressmen and women get away with things. Police, while they have a difficult job, still have to follow the law. So if laws were broken here, then they need to be held accountable. And that's for the court to figure out. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that I'm on board with this all the way. I see both sides, and I think the best way to iron this out is in court.
Some of the other charges that she has levied against these men are false imprisonment. This kind of goes to show that they shouldn't have arrested Freddie. That's kind of her point with these charges, is it was a bad arrest. And she says that the knife he had was legal. So here it is Freddie looks at the cops and flees. Does this give a cop probable cause to come and detain you, frisk you, whatever? She's kind of saying, no, it doesn't. Or she's saying, you detained him because we've given police officers pretty much carte blanche power and authority over us when it comes to them stopping and frisking us for suspicious behavior. They can determine anything as being suspicious, anything, because they don't have to have a reason to stop you and frisk you. All they need to do is come up with that reason later when you're arrested of why. He's in a bad area of town. He has an arrest record. They might know him because of his arrests, and he flees. Therefore, that gives them the behavior that they need to go and chase him down and frisk him. And then they find a weapon on him, a knife. So
they are legal in what they did. So yeah. I don't think these charges work. The false imprisonment charges, they don't work for me. And I'm not saying people should not question what the officers did. I think that's fine to question, but legally they're on solid ground. And when I was looking into this, there's a Supreme Court case, Illinois versus Wardlow, where there was a guy named Sam Wardlow who, after spotting officers, fled. And because he was in an area known for drug dealing, they pursued him and they arrested him. Now, I guess at issue here was, were they justified in pursuing him? Because it's not against the law to run from the police.
No.
As long as you didn't do something illegal prior to that, that set the officers onto you. If you see an officer and you turn and you run, they're not supposed to just chase you. But in this Supreme Court case, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that if there are other circumstances, such as you're in a high crime area, then they can pursue you. Now, this is meant to keep the public safe, I'm sure, but this sets up a problem for me. So legally, they're right. Legally, I think the false imprisonment charges are ridiculous.
I don't.
But I'm saying legally, the courts have decided that's the law.
Well, here it is, though. It's up to the prosecutor and judge to determine if the cop had probable cause, if the suspicious behavior was enough.
No, what I'm saying is the Supreme Court's already ruled on this. A police officer can track you down. They can pursue you if you flee from them and you're in a high crime area. That's in this court case. And this is from 2000. It's already been settled.
But here's the thing is it them pursuing them and detaining him that's false imprisonment, or is it them arresting him for this knife that is the false imprisonment?
Well, we can talk about that too.
Yeah.
One of the officers apparently, at least anonymously, has said, release a picture of the knife. It's illegal. They have not done so, have they? I've not seen a picture of the knife.
The prosecutor says it's legal.
Okay, but we don't know. Again, some people have questioned her motives. I'm saying to you, it's been said, release an image of the knife. It's illegal. Now, I looked into the laws.
So they stopped a mass stabbing. That's great.
No. It's you know how it is in this country. A weapon's a weapon, yeah. And you either have a right to carry it or you don't. When I was looking at purchasing a knife to carry, there are certain lengths and styles that you can't just carry on your person.
Yeah.
Now, while I may think that's a little ridiculous, in Baltimore, they have rules there.
Yeah.
And if it has a spring to it at all, that makes it illegal. It doesn't matter the length of the knife. It could be a really small knife. And if it's spring assisted at all.
So it's a stupid law that they're enforcing.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say it right now. I think the laws are stupid.
Whether it's not, it's the length of a barrel on a shotgun in Ruby Ridge or a spring loaded knife. I think it's a ridiculous law. But regardless, prosecutor says it was a legal knife.
Well, again, because they haven't released an image of it, I find this interesting.
She's the one that's levying the charges. So if she says it's legal, that's all I got to go on.
Yeah, but the charges are in Freddie Gray's favor, essentially. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Well, but so, I look at the Michael Brown case, and that prosecutor throws out a bunch of evidence and things that would...
Yeah, but from attorney to attorney, you have no idea if they're on the up and up or not. We have no idea. I'm just saying, since we don't know what kind of knife it was, odds are, to me anyway, I don't know why this knife would prompt an arrest other than they wanted to bring this guy in.
He ran. They apprehended him. Now they have to arrest him. I mean, that's their whole job, is to arrest people.
Well, I don't know if every officer would agree with that. I'm sure some officers let people go after they pursue him. It depends on what they find.
Yeah.
I just don't know how a knife that fits in his front right pocket, that's clipped in there, has a clip on it, is going to be that dangerous of a knife that they're like, oh yeah, we're going to prevent, as you said, a mass stabbing or who knows what. People typically have a knife on them for self-defense.
Yeah.
Especially if it's clipped in your pocket like that. All I'm saying is, legally, I think they're justified. It's just, I have a problem with some of this because you and I were talking about it earlier before we started recording, and you mentioned something, institutionalized racism. And I don't know that it's racist. I think a lot of this ends up being a result of discrimination against poor people.
Well, when people hear the word racist, they hear hatred for a race. And when you say institutionalized racism, they just see KKK members in positions of office. But they don't understand that when you target a certain area, poor area, that has a majority minorities in it, you target them for the arrests, you target them for the stop and frisk. When you go look at the stats for stop and frisks, it's 52% African American, and then it's like 20% Hispanic, and then whites and everybody else are the rest of the percentages. But it's over half of stop and frisks are blacks.
Well, you remember what I said about the Illinois versus Wardlow case?
Mm-hmm.
Think about this. They're saying if someone sees a police officer and flees, you can't just pursue them. But if there's another factor involved, like a high crime area, then you can. Well, guess where all the high crime areas are?
Where they arrest the most people.
This is a problem for me because the laws need to be more fair. I understand what they're saying is, oh, we'll have a better chance to catch criminals. But what kind of criminals are these?
Well, here, Aaron, you live in a fairly nice neighborhood, right? I mean, I won't say it's upper middle class, but it's fairly nice. But you told me about the guy down the street that has the pick-me-up truck and the Confederate flags.
Oh, he's a few miles from me.
Okay. So he drives his truck real fast down the road. One day the cops decide to stop him.
And they
arrest him because he runs a stop sign. Now he has an arrest record. Now every time he's driving around and a cop's behind him, he runs his license plate, sees he has an arrest record, pulls him over, and starts finding issues with him and arresting him, and they build up an arrest record because they can just do that. Now, oh, who's his friends? Let's focus in on them. Now all of a sudden you're living in a high-risk crime neighborhood, Aaron, because they've targeted people in your neighborhood and arrested them.
Well, I don't know if I go that far, but I would say that these high crime areas are made up of people who are poor, and they do not have the luxury of the same opportunities and choices that people who do not live in those areas have.
But that's why you just proved my point, is they don't target your neighborhood, Aaron.
I mean, yeah, but what kind of laws are being broken? So I'm sure...
Oh, trust me, white people sell just as many drugs as blacks or any other minority.
Right, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that the areas they're focusing on, the people do not have the luxury of having this facade.
Yeah.
you know, of being in a quote unquote nice area where you don't, you're not seeing any problems.
Yeah,
but there are problems.
Because in nice neighborhoods, the kid isn't standing on the corner in an open air market to sell his cocaine. He has his friend come in and play his Xbox for a while, and then they do the deal. Or they have a dinner party. Or they do it in a different way where they're not going to be targeted by police. But here it is they stop and frisk over 50% African-Americans. And then once that person goes to trial, they have a much higher rate of being found guilty. So take the word, take the word racism as institutionalized racism and just put in institutionalized inequality or institutionalized
discrimination. I think that's more appropriate. And I would say, just as we talked about on our War on Drugs episode, where certain kinds of cocaine that are used in urban areas versus the suburban areas.
Oh, crack cocaine versus regular cocaine.
Completely different sentencing.
Yeah.
And sentencing laws. And look, you're not going to see it if you're biased.
Yeah.
But if you just open yourself up and just look at the facts and just look at the cocaine situation, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
We're talking about the same damn thing, just prepared in a slightly different way. And now we're going to give one guy basically a warning. And then the other person gets the book thrown at him.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Pure powdered. Oh yeah. Anyways, we're going off topic here.
But. No, well, it's sort of on topic only because we're trying to discuss why people would be upset in Baltimore. They're upset because someone died in custody when you would think that would be liability.
Yeah.
You would think that they would say, oh, we're liable. Now they are they not? Didn't they pay out money?
Yeah. And I'm glad they paid out money.
How much did they pay out?
$6.4 million.
That's a hefty chunk of change. Now, it doesn't bring him back. But what it does say is it says, we are this sorry.
Yeah.
That he died under our watch and will pay you all this money. $6.4 million. It's a lot of money.
Now, a lot of people have problems that they paid this out before the cops went to trial. They're saying that by the settlement payout, it's showing that the cops are guilty. And there's a big problem with this that's been put out there. Now,
what do you think? Because I have a big disagreement with this.
I'm glad you do. I see both sides of it. Myself, actually, I think it's on one side, yes, by paying it out such a large sum, they say, oh, well, you're just appeasing the mob and you're showing guilt and blah, blah, blah for these cops. I wish they would have paid it out and maybe had an undisclosed sum because maybe the amount might show guilt. I don't know. It's a touchy subject there.
Yeah, they could have kept it under wraps, the amount, but I'm just saying from a outsider standpoint who some believe that for some reason, since he was not secured, that he fell and injured himself basically fatally here, that they're liable for that. That doesn't necessarily mean the officer's at fault. What I'm getting at is policy.
Yeah.
This idea of sending out a policy update via email, that's ridiculous. They need to do a meeting where we're briefing all the officers before they head out on patrol. Well, we have this important update for you guys.
Hey, you know what, Aaron? I won't even go that far with it. That cop's still liable because he didn't check his email. Sorry.
Forget all that. I'm saying they're liable.
Yeah.
The man died under their watch.
Yeah.
They're liable for what happened to him.
Yeah.
Whether it was intentional or accidental, they're liable. So, for me, until they go through the courts and argue this in court,
the
that remains to be seen.
Yeah.
Whether it was intentional or non-intentional, I'm saying they're still responsible because they took him into custody and his life was in their hands.
Yeah.
To me, it's not prejudicial. I don't think it'll affect these cases because as we saw with the first one, there's already a mistrial.
Yeah.
Now, are people trying to argue that because that settlement was paid out, that these people couldn't find for the officers? Because this is basically for the officer.
Yeah, it is.
Now, will they retry him? I don't know. But so far, nothing.
I was trying to find what the officer's argument was, why they're innocent of these crimes. I couldn't find a lot of quotes from them or their attorneys. I could find a lot of things that Fox News likes to put out there. Fox News points out that the prisoner that they picked up on the way to the police station made a statement. He told the police officers that he heard banging sounds coming from Freddie Gray's compartment, sounding like Freddie was trying to hurt himself. That is what the police officer wrote down from this prisoner's statement. That got quoted in the Washington Press or what is
Post?
It? Post, Washington Post. They put this out there, and Fox News ran with the story that this is Freddie hurt himself in the back of the van. And they absolutely they double down on this story. Since that story's been released, that prisoner has said, I was misquoted. That prisoner has said, I was taken out of context. That is not what I said. I said I heard light banging sounds and like moans or something to that effect from that compartment. Light banging compared to a crazy man trying to hurt himself. There's a big discrepancy between those two comments. Washington Post redacted the article and posted a correction. Now, did they do this just to push their left-wing agenda, or did they do this because they're like, wow, we got it wrong, and we're posting a correction?
Did it come out after the autopsy information was leaked, or before?
All after.
Well, it was probably helped along because the autopsy report, even though it hasn't been made public, the information that has leaked about it said that he didn't have injuries.
To his head, essentially.
Well, he had a single injury to his head from the bolt, is what I keep hearing. But if he was really throwing himself around and causing problems, he would have a lot of bruising.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
But I have a problem with this because, one, his ankles and hands are both shackled. It's going to be hard for him to throw himself around. Two, on multiple stops before this prisoner was picked up, the cops actually wrote in their reports that he was laying on the floor of the van and almost unresponsive before they even got to the police station. So the police reports themselves contradict a man flopping around hurting himself. So I have to throw out the original statement that he hurt himself. And that's pretty much the defense, right, for these police officers is they put him in the back of the van. Yeah, they might not have buckled him in, even though they had over four opportunities to buckle him in. Freddie asked for medical attention multiple times, at least twice, but probably more, and was denied that medical attention. So that was the defense I could find.
And but that's a defense. That's not their defense. Because it's an ongoing investigation, because they're going to court, they can't really say anything.
Yeah.
Their lawyers would advise them not to anyway.
But this is the public argument right now.
Well, the public argument is happening with just one side, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, you could say the other side is Fox News, but having watched the Fox News reports, they're rather ridiculous. I didn't care for what they've put out so far.
Well, they don't mention that he was unresponsive before the prisoner was placed in the back of the van. They don't mention a lot of things about that van ride. They don't mention the 10 years of people being injured in the back of Baltimore police vans. Might be longer. That was just the earliest one I could find. And multiple complaints filed against them for rough rides. They don't mention any of that. They only mention one guy's statement that has changed, and a other huge news media outlet has posted a correction for. But again, they just run with the original statement. Another thing that Fox News says was Mosby overcharged the police officers to appease the mob and to appease everybody, levied way too many charges against these men. Knowing what we know and all the cases we cover, and talking with lawyers and everything, that's what they do. It's way easier to drop a charge than to add one later. This is just common practice. So the allegation of she's overcharging them because she has an agenda, she's overcharging them to appease a mob. No, she's overcharging because it's much easier to drop a charge than add one. So you cover all the charges first, and then you drop them as the evidence permits or doesn't permit.
I get it. I think it comes down to you have people saying that he was a drug dealer. Who cares?
His life isn't worth $6.4 million and six other officers' lives. And let me introduce you to a little activist group called Black Lives Matter. They're not out there to say cops' lives don't matter. You know, it's like, save the whales. You're not saying screw the dolphins. You're saying we have a problem with the whales that we want to address. And that's their point, is Freddie's life mattered. Here we see people, the media, and the system saying, no, it doesn't matter. That's kind of their inception, that their core value of, no, here it is. This is what we stand for. This is why we protest and do our thing.
Yeah, I think this is where there's going to be a missed opportunity, because you have one side that believes that there's this institutionalized discrimination going on, or racism, and then the other side saying, we're trying to do our jobs. And what I'm seeing getting lost is that the system needs to do a better job of taking care of not only justifying arrests, because frankly, if you're going to arrest a guy for a little knife in his pocket, I find it ridiculous. But beyond that, there needs to be respect shown, because if you're trying to enforce laws against a population that does not respect you, then I think you're going to have more problems. And if law enforcement wants to face greater pushback, then they can keep doing this. And I'm not saying all precincts are doing this. I'm sure there are precincts that are not. And I keep hearing that our precincts are pretty good. Our Kansas City police departments are pretty good. But
yet I saw them not buckle in the guy that they arrested right there. I mean,
right. We don't know how widespread this is, but I'm just saying, when it comes down to it, the best way to deal with this Black Lives Matter movement and things like that, there needs to be empathy. Because right now, with the way things are operating, with having the law on your side, it's not working. Right? So, look, it's not like these people are marching and saying, you should never arrest anybody.
No.
You shouldn't enforce the laws. They're just basically saying, how come this guy had to die?
Yeah.
The response from all the experts saying that Freddie Gray died and it was an accident, he's in their custody. If he hadn't been arrested, if he hadn't been put in a van with no seatbelt, he would still be here today, probably, right?
Yeah. Well, and here we see, wrapped up all in one case, the erosion of our rights and institutional racism or discrimination. You know, I don't like the stop and frisk policy here. To me, if I'm walking down the street, I shouldn't be stopped and frisked. If you have no cause for this, then I don't expect it to happen. Yet they can do it. They absolutely can do it. Sadly, my joke in the thinking sideways Frosty thing, when I say the cop tells Frosty the snowman to stop and he doesn't, and now he's disobeyed a lawful order, it's absolutely true. And that's the sad part. I mean, if let's say police officers had a tip that there was going to be a terrorist attack, KCI airport, then you know what? That's severe enough that I think, yeah, you should be able to go stop and frisk people because there is an imminent danger here. But for the lowest, pettiest crimes, I don't understand how we allow a stop and frisk, pretty much the throwing away of our Fourth Amendment right for our safety. I mean, for drugs, for a pocket knife, or Sandra Bland's case for not using a turn signal. She's getting arrested for this. Between probable cause, stop and frisk, and being arrested for not using a turn signal, this is the erosion of our rights here. I want cops to be able to stop and frisk real dangers, not some guy walking down the road. That's my problem with this, is Freddie really wasn't doing anything wrong. He ran, and he happens to live in a bad part of town. Yes, he has an arrest record. I just don't see the probable cause for all of this. He ran. Okay. He has a prior arrest record. Okay. He had a knife on him. Okay. Now he deserves to die?
Well, okay. That might be taking it too far because...
I'm not taking it too far because I'm reading all the comments on YouTube and all the news articles where people are saying this dude did not matter. He had no value. He did nothing for society. Who cares? He's not worth $6.4 million.
How the government responds to this issue, that's what matters. Some guy speaking out on YouTube, I've read those comments. He doesn't matter. What matters to me is what are they going to do now? Because this guy died, whether intentionally or non-intentionally, under their watch. So for me, they do need to reevaluate, in my opinion. Yes, legally, they have a lot on their side. My problem is how this has become the norm.
Yeah.
So I agree that they should not pursue him. It's not like he stabbed someone. If he had prior arrests, then deal with those in court.
Yeah.
Just because he had prior arrests doesn't mean, oh, he had prior arrests, let's get him again.
Yeah. Well, but that's what it's turned into.
That's right. So that's where I have a problem with this, but I'm not going to go as far as to say, oh, well, he deserves to die, or however people are saying it. They need to reevaluate how they interact with the public. Yes, especially in high crime areas, because this is unnecessary. And what it does, it sends a message that, oh, because you live here, yeah, you aren't worth it. So send a better message. Send a message that says all people, you know, their lives have value. And the best way to do that is not to treat them like they're under your thumb constantly. And Freddie Gray would still be here if they did that.
Absolutely.
I just want to say one more thing. With all of the riots that happened in Baltimore, one thing that I did notice was that Freddie's family spoke out often and said that Freddie would not want violent protests occurring in the wake of his death. So I think that's incredible. I think it's great. And I know that
they didn't have to say that.
Yeah, they don't have to say anything. They could just sit back and go, this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually spoke out and said, Freddie would not want this. And to me, that shows what kind of mindset his family has, which is let the courts deal with this. Don't take this into your own hands. Let's do things the right way. And violence isn't the answer. And that's the message of peace. And I think of hope, because they're saying we don't need to resort to this. Yeah. Let's just see what happens. I think it's great. So credit to Freddie Gray and his family. I guess for me, it comes down to I'm not sure what should happen to the officers, because I can't say I know what their mindset was. We can go back and we can see they didn't buckle him in. They didn't try to keep him safe. And so when I see terms in the charges like reckless endangerment, I get it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I guess what I'd like to see out of this is I would like to see them try to fix the issues that are there. And that's nothing against the officers. That's against the way institution is.
The policies, the system.
Yeah, the system.
And I understand why they charge six officers, because all six were involved. Now, they were all involved in different, you know, degrees.
Right.
But each one of them could have corrected the other one's action. You know, the arresting officer could have said, why aren't you buckling them in? The driver could have said, we need to go get medical attention. They could have checked and balanced themselves. But so they're all on the same side and they're not going to check each other.
Right. And I'm sure there are plenty of people out there saying the courts won't fix this either.
It's possible.
So is it likely the system will change? I would argue not.
No.
And I think it's too bad, because the message that they're sending is keep complaining, we'll pay you some money, and we'll move on. And talk about disregard for human life.
Yeah, and it's sad when you criticize law enforcement at all, you run into, it's like a few good men, you know, you can't handle the truth. You can't handle how hard their job is. You would never understand, so you can't criticize.
Well, I have plenty of respect for law enforcement. All I can say to that is if there are issues that need to be fixed, then fix the issues.
Yeah.
Don't hide behind, well, we have a tough job. No, I know you have a tough job. I don't know that I could deal with that many different personalities and different criminal types in a given day. That doesn't excuse any wrongdoing that they may be involved with. That just doesn't. Hold yourself to a certain standard, because with great power comes great responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to keep earning respect is to
do the right thing.
Do the right thing. That's it. That's all you have to do. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries, and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.